Woody Allen's new collection of what his publisher calls humour writing is his first in over 25 years. Half the 18 short pieces in Mere Anarchy were first published in the New Yorker magazine. The others are in print for the first time. Some of the pieces are anarchic, surreal, deadpan, satirical of much in modern American life. A convict executed for cutting the tags off mattresses, a liberty allowed to the consumer alone, is paid a great sum of money by Nike for the television rights to his execution. The company then puts its logo on the front of his black death hood. Mickey Mouse testifies in a Walt Disney shareholder suit over a severance package paid to its departing president, and a rare piece of writing comes to light in Heidelberg, the Friedrich Nietzsche diet book. Vintage Woody Allen are tried and tired ground. Well, two people have been reading the book for us, journalist Belinda McKeown in New York and actor and writer Mark O'Halloran in Dublin. Belinda McKeown in New York, this new Woody Allen collection, I have to say I really enjoyed it, but I'm not sure it's him at his very best.
Yeah, I would agree with that sense. I think that, you know, Vincent, you sort of went over the plots of many of the 18 pieces there in your introduction. And in a sense, that's the maximum enjoyment that a lot of readers will get out of this collection. You know, the punchlines are very short. The idea of, for example, Mickey Mouse on trial in the Disney financial scandal, talking about Goofy and Donald Duck having dinner parties with Disney executives. The idea of this sort of thing is hilarious, but often as they're spun out into what are actually quite short pieces, they are quite tired. And in saying that, there are some, well, not many, but a couple of really very funny pieces in the collection. There's a set of back and forth letters between the father of a boy who's done brilliantly at film camp and the owner of that film camp, who wants 50% of the $16 million offered to the kid by Miramax. This calisthenics, poison ivy, and final cut, the piece is called, and it is hilarious. But a lot of the rest of it is not just that the plots are predictable, but that each piece ends with the same very quickly resolved sense that the narrator flees a scene, or the problem is solved by somebody else's absenting themselves from the situation. Everything comes to a stop very quickly, and I mean, the sense that I had a lot of the time while I was reading was that these were cop-outs on Allen's part.
Did you laugh much? I mean, I actually began, when I began to read the book, I thought, this isn't very funny at all. And then I got into it, and the last five or so I thought were really, really good. And I was on a train yesterday, and yeah, I was laughing quite a lot.
I was laughing on the subway a lot as well here, and you know, you could see people looking at the cover of the book saying, "Oh, okay."
It's a good ad for Woody Allen.
Yeah,
somebody laughing on the train.
But the things you laugh at are the things you'd laugh at in a Woody Allen film. You know, the turn of phrase, or the imagined expression on somebody's face, or the use of you know, somebody hearing somebody I squealed or I was terrified, and it's when the context doesn't seem to suit the squealing or the being terrified. That's what's funny. But the longer, convoluted, more elaborate plots, that's not actually where the humour lies. It's just in the very, very tiny touches, of which there are many, but, you know, I don't think a whole collection can stand on that.
Mark O'Halloran, I have a feeling that you were not so taken with
the
book.
No, I can honestly say I didn't laugh at all. And I found his voice seemed, there was an element of bitterness in it. And when I did get amused, I got amused in between the language, when he would describe something like he accidentally took the poison that he was trying to poison his nanny with. And I felt I could see visually what that would look like in a Woody Allen film, and I could see his persona acting that out. But around that, the language isn't funny. I think the language is incredibly overwrought. I just thought that he overworked a lot of them.
I kind of enjoyed some of that, though, because I thought he was, in a way, paying homage to some of the really early comic writers and all this kind of very florid language and the names that he invents.
Yeah, I think, though, that if that's used as a character trait for the character you're writing, then it can be incredibly funny. And each of these stories has that kind of in it, and you see the Woody Allen character in there. But in the early Woody Allen, like those stand-ups from the 60s, there's an amount of pain with them. Whereas with this collection, I think there's an amount of bitterness with it, which makes it unfunny. Mm. And also with the 60s stand-up, or with the films, you laugh because I think you know who he is, or you know who you think the archetypal character that Woody Allen plays is. But now we know Woody Allen, it's hard to laugh anymore. Do you know what I mean? Does
I suppose
that make
I
any
didn't
sense?
Find it. I do know what you mean, but I suppose I didn't find that. I kept coming back. I could hear his voice as I was reading all the time. And sometimes that disturbed me and sometimes I was glad of it. And I suppose that's what makes him so unique. But you'd said that you were reading another book by a Jewish comic writer from...
Yeah, a guy called Leo 50s? Rostan from the 1930s.
From the 30s.
It was written before the war. And it's a book called The Education of Hyman Kaplan. It's about set in a language school where this guy is trying to teach this Jewish immigrant called Hyman Kaplan. And it is unbelievably funny. It falls down dead funny every single page. And also, I've been reading a lot of David Sedaris at the moment. And David Sedaris is in a similar vein to, I think, where Woody Allen would have pitched his material in a weird kind of way. But David Sedaris is both deeply funny and deeply touching and deeply emotional. And I think that's what's missing out of this collection. And I feel that it feels like Woody Allen hasn't advanced and he's just got less funny.
Do you think, though, that in a way your reading of this book was soured slightly by the fact that you were reading it so soon after?
No, because I've got the CDs of his stand-up in the 60s and I still laugh out loud at it. You know, the moose story and that story with the ant is unbelievably funny because there's a degree of pain with it that I feel is just bitterness now. I mean, I could be wrong and just be bitter myself.
is there a reason for Allen to be bitter? I know I think he's been having problems getting funding for some films recently.
I mean, what's very funny in a lot of this collection is the stance that he takes on the creation of art, on the idiocy of Broadway, of the ideas for Broadway musicals, on the pretentiousness of certain literary styles. I think a lot of the convolution of the writing is an attempt to sort of parody is an attempt to parody the act of writing and how often that results in very bad writing. And I mean, I didn't actually think of it as bitterness. I didn't think of it as entirely successful. But the strain that's running through the collection, you often see the theme of, a filmmaker who can't get money, can't get backing, or somebody who can't get backing or can't get support for a piece of art he wants to make, usually because it's entirely rubbish. But there has to be an element of what Allen has gone through in recent years making his own films, where he's basically had to leave New York and go to London and other places because Hollywood has turned on him. And, you know, a couple of years ago there was a front page story in the New York Times which was just completely knifing Allen. It was a real, massacre piece on him. So he really has suffered at the hands of people, who worshipped him not very long ago. And I guess that the collection is imbued with that, but I didn't see it as being bitter. I didn't see it as being entirely funny either. But I think that maybe Allen is creating these stories from whatever is closest to hand. And for him, that's an experience that's very close to hand. I mean, we see him I think the collection's also, his work has always been inspired by the American humorist S.J. Perelman, who was also somebody who wrote short pieces for The New Yorker. He co-wrote a couple of Marx Brothers films. I mean, he made this style, I think. And Allen actually, it's said that Allen sent a couple of pieces into The New Yorker when he was a lot younger in this vein. And Wallace Shawn, the editor, told him that they already had a Perelman and, to go and create his own style. So maybe it is that in his older age, he feels now that he can return to that impulse. I mean, I think with his most recent films, we've seen him doing whatever the damn hell he wants, whether it's, casting himself opposite Scarlett Johansson in a leading role. I think that's sort of, he's just going to do his own thing. And it doesn't necessarily, as with the films, it doesn't necessarily result in great art. But for me, a lot of the appeal of this was nostalgic. A lot of the appeal of this collection is entirely nostalgic. This is funny because Woody Allen made this kind of thing funny a long time ago. He did it better a long time ago. But
that's kind of what you're saying, Mark.
This notion
of nostalgia, that we're harking back to something that maybe isn't so strong or so funny anymore.
Yeah, and it's just like if you keep repeating the same joke, it loses its impact, I think. And that's why it's kind of hard to look at these films now, because there's a diminishing return with them. They're pretty much always in the same ballpark or the same area, but possibly not as good. They're not terrible, but they're not as good. So they wear, and the audience moves away. I mean, the one story in this, actually, just to say something positive about it, that I really liked was the guy who was hired to do novelizations of Marx Brothers films.
I thought that was very funny.
That was funny. I have to say that was funny. But that's kind of vintage Woody Allen, because you felt for this man who was trying his best in this situation. And and trying to do a serious novelisation of the Marx Brothers. I'd like to have read that book, actually.
Yeah, I think it could have been a fine book.
Yeah, it could have been fantastic.
Yeah, but even that, that really did make me laugh, I have to say.
It made... I'd been so annoyed by a few of them up to that point. I was not well disposed, but it was the most successful of them, I think.
Mm. Belinda, at times, some of the pieces reminded me a little of the modern satirist George Saunders, American satirist, The Brief and Frightening Reign of Phil, etc. And his very savage satire on the commercialisation of America. Mm-hmm. And yet these pieces seemed, in a way, to hold back, to never quite go for the jugular.
I would argue that Saunders and, you know, people like David Foster Wallace actually exist partly because Allen existed in the first place. You know, he is one of the people who made that kind of writing, that kind of satirical writing, laden with irony, dependent on digression, dependent on, you know, fragmenting the narrative, turning it upside down. That exists partly because a writer like Allen existed and was writing 30 or 40 years ago. But I agree. I mean, I think there's a lot in the title, Mere Anarchy. It's just he's belittling himself from the beginning. And for me, the cop-out that seemed to come at the end of every piece really tuned into that. Allen, he was just knocking these out. You really do get that sense. You know, they were probably written in the morning over the breakfast table. And so it's not just that he's holding back. I mean, that's certainly one issue. He's maybe underestimating his own style, which is quite kind of poignant, but also really that they're just not successful, because maybe there's an idea that comedy is, well, I mean, which is a startling idea, if, you know, to imagine this coming from Allen, but that comedy is something very disposable and very cheap and ultimately not very useful. Whereas, you know, writers like Saunders and David Foster Wallace and, say, the people behind Max Sweeney's magazine or The Believer, journals like that, which are doing, you know, very respected work in America today, depending on this kind of satire and this, you know, coming at things from this very odd angle. I mean, you know, written in another way, these pieces could be taken quite seriously as short stories, you know, as comic short pieces. But as they are, I mean, they're not even vignettes. I think that a couple of them, the one I liked, the one about the film camp, and there was also the idea of the guy who wanted to make a musical about the Vienna Circle, a duet between Alma Mahler and Wittgenstein called "Of Which We Cannot Speak, We Will Be Silent."
Yes.
You know, really, I mean, it shows Allen's great learning and his erudition, which has provoked some resentment among critics, you know, who have accused these just of being showy, offy pieces.
That there is a great breadth of learning and reference in the book, you know, from Hollywood to the early Greeks and everything in between.
And it feels to me like it's not learning. It's just he has a knowledge of it and he drops them in. He just references.
Do you think
things.
It's show-offy?
Totally, yeah.
I don't think it is. I think he moves very fluently between them. And I mean, it's just his thing. It's what he does. And, you know, it's no more. I don't think that it's showy-offy because, you know, in order to write the Friedrich Nietzsche diet book, he really has to go through the entire history of philosophy. And he is parodying his characters as well. I mean, this is in the point of view of a bunch of very pretentious, idiotic, self-delusional people. So he is, you know, in order to parody those people fully, he does have to draw on the breadth of that knowledge and then make it look as pretentious as he possibly can.
But aren't a lot of these, though, incredibly easy targets? To say that Hollywood is vacuous, everyone realises that. To say that a lot of stupid musicals get put on.
But is Nike an easy target? I mean, I wondered about that because that was quite savage. I mean, I was really struck by that, the notion of Nike sponsoring this execution and putting their symbol on the death hood. Is a pretty chilling idea.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's certainly not. I don't think it's an easy target.
But you don't get many chilling moments like that in the collection. And, you know, it comes back to the same thing for me again and again, that, you know, Allen made this sort of thing possible with the work that he did decades ago. And he's still in that zone. He's still making the same kind of jokes. You know, perhaps it's unfair to completely savage him for it. I think, you know, this is possible. And it's possible for us to denigrate it as tired because he made it fresh in the first place.
Yeah.
Adam Morris Jones, I think it was in The Observer, said that Allen should try out his material again in front of an audience. But a very bitter word he put in. He said, "But he should hire a better writer." I think, Mark, you'd probably be going with that. But do we need to see him again? Almost going back to those days of stand-up, because it would be very interesting to see if it would stand the test of time.
You just wonder, does he have anything else to say? Do you know what I mean? Mm. He has said so much, and he's been so successful. does he need to get up in front of an audience and be a stand-up comic anymore? You know, has he said what he wants to say and that's it? I don't know.
I worry also about,
maybe I'm just being overly sensitive, but the depiction of women in the book is a bit off at times.
Belinda, yeah, what's your take on that?
Turn to the woman. It kind of struck me as nursing home humor. A lot of the ways that he refers to the wives, you know, he says at one point, "What do I know about physics? What I do know about physics is that to a man standing on the shore, time passes quicker than to a man on a boat, especially if his wife is with him." Mm, yeah. And you know, it's again and again referring to the sort of old battle axe wife in the background.
They're either really ugly or very beautiful and sexy.
That's true. But I mean,
are they
that
waves
the world
or particles?
See?
And
the world we see in his films as well. Yeah, I mean.
But again, I think a lot of it is tongue in cheek. In the book, the whole Jewish and Yiddish kind of shtick is very, very strong. And I loved that in it. I have to say, I discovered words and phrases I never knew existed. And
I don't know if they do exist.
Another joy for me.
Yeah. Schmitzel, Schmendrick, Zaftig, Zonix, Shlomo. Yeah, I mean, I can't even say them properly. But I do wonder if they actually do exist, those words. Mm. You know, are there that many words beginning with S-C-H-L?
There probably are. In Yiddish, I suspect there are.
Good point.
Looking at the broader spectrum of comedy in the States now, where do you think Alan fits in, and where do you think a book like this will fit in, and where will it sell? I mean, is it very much aimed at the readers of The New Yorker, or is there a kind of broader market for it?
It is. It's aimed at fans of Woody Allen and of people who want to be fans of Woody Allen or think they're fans of Woody Allen because it has his photograph squarely on the front cover. You know, I don't think it's aimed particularly at readers of The New Yorker who'll have seen every one of these pieces over the last couple of years. But it's just Woody Allen is a brand name, and that's why this collection was brought out. For, you know, to really see his writing at its strongest, you'd need to go back to his other three collections, which I think have just been brought out in a collection in a bigger collection called The Insanity Defense, or it's coming out very soon. This is, I think, equivalent to his most recent films, Match Point and Scoop. You know, it's very slight and it's trivial, but you'd almost allow it to him because of what he's done in his career. He's made a huge number of films, and at least, I mean, you know, so many of them. He's made so many of them that a huge proportion of them are brilliant.
So we can
it's
say...
It's the same with his fiction.
I liked his early funny work. That's what we want to say. I like his more serious work, actually, funny enough. I like that film, Another Woman, just done in the early 80s, which nobody ever gets to see, but it's a beautiful film, and it's quite serious, and I'd much rather if he was going in that direction rather than trying to be frothy when he doesn't feel like it.
I don't know, I mean, again, I have to come back to saying that, you know, I laughed a lot at this book. And Belinda, I think you laughed a good deal.
I laughed, quite a lot. I mean, again, it's because you know his voice. You can hear his voice. Seriously, I didn't laugh that much. I'm not going to be bullied into laughing more than I want to laugh.
Margot Halloran, I know you didn't.
I didn't. I raised a smile at that one thing that I mentioned, and after that I was just horrendously annoyed. It reminded me of something like, things like Mad magazine make me really crazy with annoyance as well.
I don't like them either, but I must say I didn't see the resemblance. And I'd say go back and read the last four or five. You know,
you can't make me. And I won't, I won't.
I get the union involved. It's not worth it.
My time is done here now.
It is. Listen, thanks to both of you, Belinda McKeown in New York.
Hello,
and Margot Halloran. And Mere Anarchy by Woody Allen is published by Erbery Press and is available now.